This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatimi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. قل إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things, and no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines. A top US senator says the situation in Afghanistan is the result of years of policy and intelligence failures as Washington steps up evacuation from Kabul. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says the U.S. failure in Afghanistan shows that Washington's regional policies are miscalculated and ignorant. Also ahead, Muslims in Iran and other countries mark Tasu'a, the day before the martyrdom or anniversary of Imam Hussein III, Shia Imam. Thank you for joining us. Our top story, the U.S. State Department says Washington has completed its drawdown of its embassy personnel from the Afghan capital, Kabul. Ned Price said the remaining embassy staff are assisting the evacuation of American nationals and Afghan allies. Meanwhile, members of the U.S. Congress vowed to investigate President Joe Biden's administration over the collapse of the Afghan government and the rise of the Taliban to power. The chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Bob Menendez, described what happened in Afghanistan as the horrifying result of many years of policy and intelligence failures. He said the recent developments were the culmination of a series of mistakes made by Republican and Democratic administrations over the past 20 years. The European Union says the Taliban have won the war, so the bloc has to engage in dialogue with them.
I haven't said that we are going to recognize the Taliban. I just said that we have to talk with them for everything, even to try to protect women and girls. Even for that, we have to get in touch with them.
Joseph Borrell said the bloc had miscalculated the military capabilities of the Afghan army against the Taliban. He noted that the EU's priority at the moment is to evacuate European nationals and Afghan citizens who have been working with them over the past 20 years. According to Borrell, preventing a possible influx of migrants into the EU is another issue high on the bloc's agenda. Meanwhile, Germany says it will judge the Taliban by their actions.
We'll need to see what to think of this in the next few days. We have also discussed this today in the Foreign Council of the European Union and have come to the conclusion that we will judge the Taliban by their actions.
German Foreign Minister stressed the significance of a peaceful power transition in Afghanistan. He said Berlin will evaluate the situation after the new Afghan government is installed. Also, the United Nations said it's awaiting action from the Taliban on the pledges it has made. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, however, said his country won't recognize a Taliban government in Afghanistan. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says the U.S. humiliating withdrawal from Afghanistan shows that Washington would not fight on behalf of its allies.
But when people are coming to see this also, when Biden says, and this is a lesson and a message to all the allies of America and the region, he's also defending himself. This is a very significant statement, a very, very significant statement, and I call on all the allies of Americans here in the region to listen to this. It is not our job that the U.S. troops fight on behalf of anyone. If anyone thinks that the Americans will come and fight on their behalf, then this is what Biden is saying. And in order for Biden not to fight on behalf of someone, he accepted a humiliating defeat and withdrawal in Afghanistan.
Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said the U.S.-led NATO mission in Afghanistan failed miserably. He noted that Washington's withdrawal from the country was not by choice, but was in fact the result of its inability to stay. Nasrallah said the U.S. failure in Afghanistan also demonstrates that Washington's regional policies are miscalculated and ignorant. Meanwhile, the U.S. president's approval rating drops by 7% to hit its lowest level so far as Washington's two-decade war in Afghanistan ended with the rise of the Taliban to power. A national poll found that 46% of American adults approved of Joe Biden's performance in office. Biden's popularity dropped as the Taliban brushed aside Afghan forces and overran the capital, Kabul. The takeover marked the end of 20 years of U.S. military presence that cost trillions of dollars and thousands of American lives. Last month, Biden praised Afghan forces for being, quote, as well equipped as any in the world. He also said that a takeover of Afghanistan by the Taliban was not inevitable. Following the Taliban's takeover of Kabul, Italy's foreign minister has urged the West to seriously reflect on the mistakes made during the 20-year intervention in Afghanistan. Also, many geopolitical analysts have stamped the U.S. for its disorderly withdrawal from the Central Asian country. Max Civili is in Rome.
On Tuesday, 24 hours after the first plane carrying Italian nationals and diplomatic staff arrived in Rome from Kabul, top officials from Italy's government expressed their opinions about the Afghan crisis. Prime Minister Mario Draghi stressed the importance of preventing terrorism from spreading and protecting Afghan civilians and those who worked with the international community. Separately, the head of the Foreign Affairs Ministry, Luigi Di Maio, called on Western countries to seriously reflect on the mistakes made during the U.S.-led occupation that went on in the landlocked Central Asian country for 20 years. Analysts and commentators have also been deeply critical of Washington and its allies.
Betrayal, that's all Afghans are left with. All of their expectations have been betrayed. The ethical failure comes even before the political one. After 10 years, the U.S. had finally killed bin Laden in 2011. Why did they stay in Afghanistan? To export democracy? In the interest of whom?
About 50,000 Italian soldiers were deployed to Afghanistan over the past 20 years, making Italy one of the countries most involved in the region, along with the United States, Turkey, Britain, and Germany.
It was on December 30, 2001, when the Italian military arrived in the area entrusted to them by the U.S., the quadrant of Herat, in the northwest of Afghanistan. The number of Italian soldiers killed since the beginning of the U.S. occupation is 53.
Also, about 700 Italian soldiers have remained seriously or permanently injured. The mistakes made by the U.S. in Afghanistan include handing government posts to sycophants or corrupt figures.
Italians were puzzled after U.S. President Joe Biden's recent statements in which he admitted that the reason for staying in Afghanistan after Osama bin Laden's killing was not to rebuild the country, but to prevent other terrorist threats from arising there.
I have been very much disappointed by what both Biden and Blinken said about the drawdown. Biden's shift from nation-building to limited counter-terrorist strikes in Afghanistan is very hypocritical. Many of us were there to rebuild a ravaged country. I hope European members will finally work towards creating a European Union military force. It's the only way we can have our say on international issues.
Italy's foreign ministry has said it is now working on a coordinated international initiative in Afghanistan to ensure humanitarian flights and make sure to tackle the emergency in an organized manner. Max Civili, Rome.
Muslims around the world mark Tasu'a a day ahead of the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein. He's the third Shia Imam and the Prophet Muhammad's grandson. The annual rituals attract millions of mourners in various countries, but this year, like the previous one, many larger gatherings have been cancelled due to the pandemic. Iranians across the country also commemorate the occasion while observing health protocols. Tasu'a is the ninth day of the month of Muharram on the Islamic calendar. The day precedes Ashura, when Imam Hussein and 72 of his companions were martyred in 680 AD. They were killed by the tyrant at the time, Yazid, during the Battle of Karbala. Tasu'a is devoted to Imam Hussein's half-brother, Abbas ibn Ali, who made proverbial sacrifices during the battle. Security forces in Indian-controlled Kashmir have attacked Shia Muslims, preventing them from holding a religious procession in the region's capital city. The event was meant to mark the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the grandson of Islam's Prophet Muhammad. Sayyid Ali Sezbi reports.
Scores of Shia Muslims were injured and many more were arrested after government forces resorted to batons to file a mourning procession in the capital city of Indian-administered Kashmir. The authorities had imposed strict restrictions and blocked several entry and exit points in Srinagar to prevent the traditional event held on the 8th Muharram, the first month of the Islamic calendar. Defying restrictions, hundreds of people, some holding flags, poured onto the streets at several places in the city center. However, police attacked them and fired several rounds of tear gas shells to disperse the mourners.
All our Indian people enjoy religious freedom, but when it comes to Kashmir, they adopt double standards. Peaceful mourners here are thrashed and arrested for raising Labaik Ya Hussein slogans.
The police also beat journalists covering the event. For the last 3 decades, the authorities have banned the traditional 8th Muharram and Ashura processions in the main city, citing security reasons. Despite repeated pleas by religious bodies over the years, the ban has not been lifted till date. This year, the authorities had initially hinted at lifting the ban, but later denied permission to take out the procession.
The government is hurting the religious sentiments of people here. We condemn it in the strongest term. Kashmiri's people have made it very clear that they will not accept the ban on procession. Even if they are beaten and arrested, they will raise the flag of Imam Hussein.
The authorities say that the procession stoke anti-India sentiments and pose, quote, serious security threats. But the people here argue that if the authorities can allow the annual Hindu pilgrimage that attracts over 500,000 people, why not Muslim processions? Muharram processions in Kashmir date back to 1527 AD.
It's been 32 years and the status quo is intact. Every year, mourners defy restrictions and get thrashed in return. Religious bodies have strongly condemned the use of force against the peaceful mourners and termed the ban as a blatant breach of religious freedom and demanded its immediate withdrawal. Sayyid Safid, Indian-administered Kashmir.
10 Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails continue their hunger strike to protest against their illegal administrative detention. Some of them have been transferred from jails to Israeli military clinics after their health condition worsened. Muna Kandil reports from Ramallah.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes to protest the illegal Israeli policy of administrative detention. A total of 10 prisoners are going on with their protests, demanding the occupying regime to either release them or prosecute them. According to their families, Israel is responsible for the lives of the hunger strikers, as many were transferred to jails' military clinics after their health conditions deteriorated, while refusing to allow even their lawyers to visit them.
We know that Mujahid was transferred to the Ramleh military clinic. This means he's in a bad health condition. He has been detained over 1 year ago under administrative detention, while he was not tried in Israeli court and there are no charges against him. He decided to start an open-ended hunger strike after the Israeli authorities renewed his administrative detention for the third time. It is unfair.
Scores of Palestinians, including prisoners, relatives and friends, as well as prisoners' advocacy groups, protested outside the building of the International Committee of the Red Cross in Ramallah in solidarity with the hunger-striking prisoners, as well as with the sick inmates who face medical negligence by the Israeli Prisons Administration, while the health conditions of many of them have seriously deteriorated.
We are here today to send a message that the prisoners are not alone in their battle. We are their voice outside the jail. We are here to support the hunger-striking prisoners and to support the sick prisoners, as a number of prisoners' lives are in danger. On top of those sick prisoners are Ayad Harabat and Nasser Abu Hamid. We are demanding the Red Cross Committee to immediately act and save them because their health is seriously deteriorating.
Administrative detention is illegal. However, it's a tactic that allows Israeli authorities to put Palestinians behind bars indefinitely without charge or trial, claiming they were arrested based on secret reports which are inaccessible to prisoners themselves and their lawyers. Despite international rejection of administrative detentions, Tel Aviv is pushing with the illegal practice. It continues to trigger more hunger strikes by the Palestinian inmates who say their move is a legitimate means to resist the Israeli policy. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
In 2011, Tunisia became the birthplace of popular uprisings which quickly engulfed much of the Arab world, overthrowing several governments in the region within 10 months. Now, 10 years after a revolution, the North African country, considered the only successful uprising, is in crisis.
Back in December 2010, the self-immolation and subsequent death of a street vendor, Mohamed Bouazizi, sparked protests against unemployment, corruption, and repression across Tunisia. Mass protests and the popular revolution forced then-president Zine El Abidine Ben Ali to leave the country. The Ennahda party, banned under Ben Ali's rule, won majority of seats and formed a coalition with secular parties to draft a new constitution in October 2011. 2 years later, the leader of the left secular democratic patriot movement, Shukri Belaid, was assassinated, sparking street protests that led to the resignation of the prime minister. In January 2014, parliament approved a new constitution that guaranteed the personal freedoms and rights, giving the president and the prime minister equal power. And in October 2019, voters expressed their dissatisfaction with the major parties by electing an independent politician, Qais Saied, as a president.
I am with Tunisia, and Qais Saied is with Tunisia. The problem of Tunisia is corruption and bribery. We support the president in his recent decisions.
We have been deceived by political parties. All parties live in political adolescence, and all parties and their leaders are not qualified to lead the country. It has become clear from 10 years of experience that Tunisia should be ruled by one man.
The Tunisian political scene has been undergoing profound transformation since President Qais Saied announced his decisions. Some parties considered it as a coup, while others described it as a correction of the course.
Since the fall of Ben Ali in 2011, Tunisia has witnessed the birth of many political parties and non-governmental organizations. But 25th of July was a pivotal moment for the political parties. They no longer govern the country after the decisions of President Qais Saied. Amir Bouka, Tunis.
Brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Mournful is the earth as heaven starts to cry. Water doubts its worth as lips begin to dry. Listen to the silence. It breaks with a sad goodbye.
amid the drums of war is a mother's lullaby.
Hussein, 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 I cry for you in pain, I cry for you. I cry for you in
supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate, praise belongs to Allah who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained, and decreed, and gave death, and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
Muharram Special. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. Today is the 9th of Muharram, known as Tasua. Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, said, Tasua is the day in which Hussein, peace upon him, and his companions were besieged in Karbala. The troop of Sham encircled him and blocked his way. And the son of Marjan ibn Ziyad and Umar Sa'd were rejoicing of having a big troop, and they considered Hussein and his companions as weak and were certain that Hussein would have no more helper and companion, and the people of Iraq would not come to his assistance. The encampment of Imam Hussein has had no water for a few days, as Umar Sa'd has blocked their access to water. Children are thirsty and restless. These pressures are aimed at forcing Hussein for allegiance with Yazid, the libertine and unjust ruler. Shemr, son of Zeljoshan, joined Umar Sa'd with 4,000 forces and gave him the letter of Ibn Ziyad. Ibn Ziyad, the ruler of Kufa, had written in the letter, Umar, I have not sent you for reform with Hussein. As soon as receiving the letter, if Hussein does not accept our proposal, attack him, kill him and his companions, and after killing them, mutilate them. After killing Hussein and his companions, gallop with horses on their bodies. I know that there is no use in galloping after the death, but you should do it as I have uttered it. And if you pay attention to these words, you will be endeared to us. The letter increased movements in the troops of Umar Sa'd. They got ready for war with Hussein as they failed to force him to surrender. Imam Hussein, peace upon him, sent his brother Abbas to take respite for one night, as he loved prayer and supplication to God. Shemr was from Banu Kalb tribe and had a kinship relation with Hazrat Abbas' mother. Thus, he brought a letter of safety for him and his brothers, provided that they left Imam Hussein. Abbas roared and said strongly, should I be separated from Hussein? Woe on you, shame on you and your letter of safety. May God curse you and your letter of safety. Should we have safety while the son of Prophet's daughter has no safety? It was night and dark everywhere. Imam Hussein, peace upon him, went to his companions to seal argument with them. He said, beware that I give you permission to leave. So all of you go, as I have taken back my allegiance and I have no promise or covenant on you. Now the night has come and it has covered you. Take it as an easy pace camel and get separated. The 72 companions of Imam Hussein encircled him with love and revised their allegiance to him. When Imam Hussein, peace upon him, returned to his tent, he saw the worried looks of Lady Zainab. So he told her, By God, I have tested them and found them the men who have become ready and looking askance at death. And they are attached to death in my way like a suckling to his mother's breast. The loyalty of Imam Hussein's companions has become the absolute role model for the entire mankind. God says in Ayah 23 of Surah Ahzab, among the faithful are men who fulfill what they have pledged to Allah. Of them are some who have fulfilled their pledge, and of them are some who still wait, and they have not changed in the least. Imam Hussein, peace upon him, recited this ayah to his companions on the eve of Ashura. On the day of Ashura, Amr ibn Khalid was telling to himself, my soul, you should move toward the compassionate God. I give you good news of life at peace and ease. On that day, you will be rewarded well. Hazrat Abbas has become famous as the epitome of loyalty and fealty among the companions of Imam Hussein, peace upon him. Muslims mark the day of Tasu'a with the memory of Abbas. He was the standard bearer of Imam Hussein and the guardian of the tents. The women and children felt safe and secure as long as he was alive. The valiant brother of Imam Hussein did not spare a single moment to obey whatever the Imam told him. Ayatollah Khamenei has depicted Hazrat Abbas' loyalty and valor on the day of Ashura, saying, the loyalty of Hazrat Abul Fazl Abbas can be seen more than ever in this event of entering a branch of Euphrates and not drinking water. It has become narrated that in those moments and the last hour, these children were so thirsty that Imam Hussein and Abul Fazl went together to bring water. They went toward a branch of the Euphrates that was in the area so that they could bring water. These two brave and powerful brothers fought back to back. One of them is Imam Hussein, near 60 years old, but he was among the unique famous ones in power and bravery. Another one was his young brother of 30 and so years old. Abul Fazl Abbas with such characteristics that everyone knew him. These two brothers, shoulder to shoulder and at times back to back, in the middle of the sea of enemy, would break through the troops to reach the water of Euphrates in order to bring water. In the middle of this tough battle, suddenly Imam Hussein feels that the enemy has distanced him from his brother Abbas. At this time, Abul Fazl gets closer to water and reaches the water. According to the narrations, he fills the water container to take it to the tents. Here, everyone feels his right to put water on his thirsty lips. But he showed his loyalty there. When Abul Fazl Abbas took water, as his eyes caught sight of water, remembered the thirsty lips of Hussein. Perhaps he remembered the cries of thirst of the girls and children in the sanctuary. Perhaps he remembered the thirsty crying of Ali Asghar and couldn't drink water. He poured water on water and came out. While coming out of the river, the events take place, and he's martyred in an unmanly way.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Sacred City. Part 2.
Qom is home to the heavenly court, the historic mausoleum and shrine of Hazrat Masumeh. Hazrat Masumeh is revered by Muslims worldwide, and so her resting place being in Qom lifted the dignity and status of the city and conferred religious significance upon it. Among the other notable tourist attractions in the province are the holy Jamkaran Mosque and more than 400 other Imamzades, offspring of imams, shrines, seminaries, theological schools, historically important mosques such as Friday, Imam Hassan, Babul Jannah, and Rafat, educational and international institutes, and Qomrud Lake. The Museum of Astan-e-Muqaddase, the Holy Threshold, is one of the oldest in the country, constructed in 1935 inside the holy shrine of the Martyr Mutahhari Mosque. Its curatorial activities continued until 1974. Located in Astana Square, the museum building was built a couple of years after the Islamic Revolution in Iran. Originally, it covered an area of 500 square meters, but in 1992, the building's basement was added to the museum, increasing its total usable area to 1,000 square meters. The oldest Quran in the museum dates back to 819 AD. And there's the name of Ma'mun Abbasi on the first page. Some of the Qur'ans are written on animal skin, some on fabric, and the rest on paper. The collection within the museum has various parts and includes handwritten Qur'ans from the second Islamic century to those written in the contemporary period, coins from Islamic and pre-Islamic eras, painted tabloids and miniatures, wooden works of art including marquetry and parquetry, terracotta, bowls, glass bowls and golden inlaid tiles with designs and beautiful inscriptions belonging to the 6th and 8th Islamic centuries, stone masonry works and decorative stones, metal instruments and engravings, hand-woven silk carpets from the Safavid and Qajar eras, and hand-woven fabric.
Samples of expensive marquetry are kept in the Museum of Ostane Mogadese in Rome. One such sample is a rare marquetry door belonging to the Qajar period, built when Nasruddin Shah Qajar was in power and Mirza Taghi Khan Amir Kabir was vizier, and forms part of the tomb of Muhammad Shah Qajar. Another marquetry piece from the Qajar period, with inscriptions of famous poems by Muhtasham Kashani describing Ashura in Nastaliq calligraphy, are engraved beautifully on bones. The Chehel Akhtaran Shrine in Rome. The mausoleum of Musa Mubarakah, son of Imam Muhammad Taghi, and other offspring of the Imam. That's why the large courtyard of this collection contains three popular shrines, the Musa Mubarakah, the Chehel Akhtaran, and the Imamzade Zayd. The monument was built in 1571. Ordered by Shah Tahmasp Safavid, it was designed by Master Sultan Rumi, who was amongst the most famous architects of the Safavid era. His name is recorded in the shrine. In 1574 AD, the building's roof was renovated with brick. The ceiling is very high. A number of Sayyids and offspring of Imams are buried here. They include the sons and offspring of Imam Musa Mubarak. It is said that a total of 40 men, 40 women, and 25 children are entombed in the shrine. The library of Ayatollah Marashi Najafi. Sayyid Shahabuddin Husseini Marashi Najafi was born in 1897 in Najaf and passed away in 1990 at the age of 93. Led a frugal existence. He is famous for salvaging thousands of rare and lost Islamic books at his own expense. His library holds the world's largest collection of Shia manuscripts. The oldest undated manuscript in this library is the pages of the Holy Quran written in Kufi, going back to the 2nd and 3rd Islamic centuries. And the oldest dated manuscript is two parts of the Quran written in Kufi by Ali ibn Hilal in Baghdad in 1013. There is also a golden page of the Holy Quran in the collection bearing Imam Reza's handwriting. Now the manuscripts of the library number 60,000, 65% of them in Arabic and the rest in Persian, Turkish, Urdu, Tartari, Hibachi, Pahlavi, and Latin. Annually, between 750 and 1,000 manuscripts are added to this library. Marashi Najafi wrote more than 148 books, dissertations, and papers in his lifetime. Most of them are yet to be published. Homs traditional bazaar, scented with perfumes, has played host to travelers from far and wide who come here to buy souvenirs such as sohan, mohrs, prayer stones, and sajadehs, or prayer mats. The aroma of fresh sohan, made next to the retail shops, draws every tourist and pilgrim to itself. Homs Grand Bazaar houses a beautiful historical monument located near the mausoleum of Hazrat Masumeh. It bears the hallmarks of the Qajar era architectural style and was registered as a National Heritage Site in 1997. The building has two floors with 12 chambers. It used to have long cloth sashes that are now mostly ruined. Above the chambers and the vaulted corners is chalk architecture. The roof of the shopping center has three openings, and the middle section opens up to a height of 15 meters. The market has an arched roof, considered the largest in Iran. The monument was designed and executed by Master Hussein Romi in 1882. Custodianship of the monument was granted to Sayyid Mahmoud Tabatabai, a recognized businessman in Rome and the father of Sayyid Hussein Tabatabai. The mosque in the old square of Qom is 900 years old, and atop its fine architecture is the first minaret and dome built in Iran, and the third in the Islamic world. It is an octangular-shaped monument with a dome and two pyramid-shaped covers on top. It was built during the rule of the Qajar dynasty at the beginning of the 18th Islamic century. Later, a veranda and some other monuments were added to it. The shrine of Imam Ali ibn Ja'far, after Astana-e-Muqaddase, transcends all other monuments and mausoleums of Qom province in terms of spectacular decorations. One of the most important features of this splendid shrine is its plasterwork, which is among the most outstanding artistic works of the 8th Islamic century. There are 94 pieces of gold inlaid tiles on the monument showing plant, animal, and human designs. Nasq inscriptions containing Quranic verses and religious stories and Persian literature are among other unique decorations of the shrine, while other inscriptions and decorations are common throughout Iran and in museums around the world. The gold inlaid altar of this monument, situated at the southern end of the shrine, was built in 734 AH. It is one of the greatest artistic works of its time. Today, this altar has pride of place at the Islamic era museum in Iran's National Museum. Jamkaran Mosque, where Shia Muslims believe that Muhammad al-Mahdi, the hidden 12th Imam, who will lead the world to an era of universal peace, once appeared and offered prayers. The mosque is located on the Qom-Kashan Road, 6 kilometers outside the city of Qom. According to Muhaddith Nuri, a contemporary religious scholar, the foundation of this mosque is credited to a man named Hassan ibn Muthle Jamkarani, who was contracted to build the mosque upon the request of the 12th Imam. On Wednesday evenings, and especially on the 15th night of Sha'ban, Imam Zaman's birthday, Shia Muslims come here to pray. Imam Hassan Askari Mosque, also located in Qom near Ali Khani Bridge and next to Astana Street, is the monument of the 11th Shia Imam, Hassan Askari. It used to be called the Atiq Friday Prayer Mosque. According to various accounts, it was built by the Imam's representative, Ahmad ibn Ishaq Ash'ari, in the 3rd Islamic century. Since then, this monument has been renovated several times. Today, the oldest part of the monument is its southern veranda, built in 1750. The Imam Hassan Mosque has always been held in high esteem. Since the 9th Islamic century, the custodians of Astana Muqaddaseh have been taking care of this mosque. Rebuilt in the final years of the Safavid period, today only the southern veranda remains standing. The monument sustained extensive damage during the Qajar era flooding. At the end of Qom's Chahar Mardan Street and inside a small garden called Baghe Gumbad-e-Sabz, the Green Dome Garden, there are three historical monuments, relics from the 8th Islamic century. It is known as the Kashan Entrance. According to available historical documents, the two domes of this site are the tombs of the rulers of the Ali Safi House, independent sovereigns of Qom. The inscription on the third dome has been destroyed, so no one knows when it was made and who made it. But going by documents from various sources, this third dome, historically speaking, dates back to the same period and probably also belongs to one of the members of the Ali Safi house. The people of Qom call this collection of mausoleums Sa'd, Sa'id, and Mas'ud, the three senior Ash'ari Arabs that revitalized Qom during their time. The plaster work at these three monuments is one of a kind. 1. The tomb tower of Khaje Asiluddin, representing the tomb of two rulers of the Safi house in 761 AH. 2. The tomb tower of Khaje Ali Salih, representing the tomb of three rulers of the Safi house in 792 AH. And 3. The northern tomb tower belonging to the late 8th and early 9th Islamic centuries. The tombs at the Green Dome Garden were registered on the National Heritage List in 1931. The tomb towers located in the garden include a southern dome, a middle dome, and a northern dome. From among the valuable remembrances of Persian architecture are the old caravanserais, built in the past eras in a different communicative, economic, military, geographical, and religious environment, and then gradually, over time, developed and expanded. 2 kilometers from Mahmudabad village stands a clay castle on the edge of Qom Road. In the north of the village, there are 2 castles, one a famous stone castle and Islamic monument, and the other, called the clay castle, is made of mud. It is located north of Safid Kul, White Mountain, in the lower northern region of Qom province. According to collected documents, this castle dates back to the Ashkani era and was inhabited in successive historical periods. The castle is 45 meters long and 29.5 meters wide, with walls of various heights, but not higher than 10 meters. The castle may have served as a protective outpost monitoring travelers entering via Varamin and the fringe of Ray into the Qom district. It would have been portrayed as the landmark entrance to the city. Stone Caravanserai. This caravanserai is located on the Qom Road, 35 kilometers from Qom City. It is a 4-veranda caravanserai which lies in ruin and belongs to the Safavid period. The construction material used is mainly stone and has four semicircle-shaped towers on the western and eastern sides. Qom owes most of its global recognition to the holy shrine of Hazrat Masumeh, which glitters like a diamond sitting in the middle of the city and every year attracts a large number of pilgrims. It is the smallest province of Iran, but is conveniently situated on the main interstate highway linking several major cities.
Republican members of Congress on Sunday, August 15, criticized U.S. President Joe Biden for spending time in the presidential retreat from Camp David instead of the White House as the Taliban fought to finalize the takeover of Afghanistan. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by the staff of Fox News website. This article is published under the heading, Biden Hammered for Spending Time at Camp David as Taliban Take Control of Afghanistan. Stay tuned for more. Republican members of Congress on Sunday, August 15th, criticized President Joe Biden for spending time in the presidential retreat from Camp David instead of the White House as the Taliban fought to finalize the takeover of Afghanistan. "Why is Joe Biden on vacation?" asked Representative Jim Jordan on Sunday morning Futures. "I don't think he answered a single question from the press this weekend, so it's a scary situation," he added. Fox News confirmed on Sunday, August 15th, that Afghan President Ghani fled the country as Taliban fighters entered the Afghan capital, Kabul. Asked Senator Tom Cotton, "Why is Joe Biden hiding?" Representative Lauren Boebert accused Joe Biden of dereliction of duty. Representative Jim Banks and Representative Elise Stefanik also echoed that criticism. Camp David has always been used for both business and recreation by U.S. presidents and is fully equipped with secure video conferencing technology. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said recently that Biden loves Camp David. Psaki continued, "It's a place to be outside, hang out with your family, and there is definitely some really beautiful scenery there." Two House Democrats have also taken to Twitter to criticize the Biden administration for the way it handled the withdrawal from Afghanistan. Representative Dean Phillips of Minnesota noted, "As the Gold Star son of the Vietnam War, listening to the White House briefing on the withdrawal from the war in Afghanistan, my heart pains, especially for the thousands of Gold Star families from an eerily similar and painful episode 40, 6 years later. Referring to Saigon, there is no way to hide it. The situation in Afghanistan is another shame for this administrator. Withdrawal was never going to be easy, but it didn't have to be," said Representative Vincent Gonzalez of Texas. The United States must do everything in its power to help our partners and allies to protect and protect our national security, he added. The White House tweeted a photo of Biden sitting at Camp David and taking notes during a video conference with his national security team. Biden speaks with Vice President Kamala Harris and members of his national security team from Camp David. And also on Sunday, August 15th, a White House official told Fox News that Biden had spoken to members of his national security team about the situation in Afghanistan and would continue to receive updates and be briefed throughout daytime.